Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Deplorable Nation. I'm your host, Deplorable Janet, and today I have a beautiful, stellar new guest for you guys, but I'm sure you already know him on the podcast circuit, Mr. Kevin from Where the Weird Ones Are. How the heck are you?
I am fantastic, other than getting hot sauce in my eyeball. I'm just happy to be able to see. Yes, I'm just happy I can see right now. That's
exactly
all.
The things we do for the love of family, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, Mr. Kevin, tell my listeners like a little bit about you and your background before we get into the nitty gritty of the show.
All right. So, I don't really know where to. So early on in my life, I experienced some things that I couldn't explain regarding to, I guess, like otherworldly things. Also, at the same time, physical things from, you know, a childhood trauma aspect. So I don't know if you want to get into that stuff.
I do.
We can if you want to. So, So I had this really like negative outlook on life almost my entire existence, which led me down a path until one bright sunny day I was told that I was going to be a father, and then everything changed and turned around. Mm-hmm. You know, I did my best at being a dad. I still feel like it's the only thing that I'm good at, but
I'm sure that's not true.
So 2020 came around, and I've always been a little conspiratorial, but as soon as that whole shebang happened, I was like, what the fuck is happening? And mm-hmm. I started looking into things more. And I started to break away from society more. I even, left relationships. I'm not saying like intimate relationships. I'm saying friends and family, right? Like people that were no longer
beneficial to be in the same circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not that I don't, that I just like completely cut them off. It's just, I don't give them my time anymore because they're either negative or I don't know, just certain things. Like, well, my mother is one of them. She's the main one.
Same.
So like I will talk to her if she talks to me or if I see her, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? But I don't message her. I don't try and go see her. I've been living in my house now for 3 years. She lives a block away, has never been here. Mm-hmm. So that all happened. I went through a breakup during the 2020 thing that won't go away. And that really started like this wicked spiritual journey. And I started, finding myself. And that's how I found making my own podcast. And I was listening to podcasts and I was learning and I was reading. I was watching YouTube videos on how to make your own stuff. I make my own bread. I make my own hot sauce. Mm-hmm. I'm actually trying to turn my hot sauce into a business now. So, which is excellent. Why I was making hot sauce today and burned my face off in the process. And then I really like supernatural stories, like, the Bigfoot stories and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And that's what really started my podcast. And, you know, I dabble in conspiracies a lot too. So, that's the long and short, I guess.
So I want to ask you, like, what was the, supernatural incident that happened that kind of changed your life and your outlook on things?
Well, there was quite a few early on. Like, I saw shadow figures all the time. I don't know if you're familiar mm-hmm. with with this whole realm, but I saw shadow figures all the time. My sister did too. And my sister and I had experienced a lot of the same trauma. Her a little bit more so once we got older. It's not her story is not mine to tell, so I'm not going to, I won't get into that, but it was a few weeks after an incident that I had tried to take my own life at 9 years old, and I was sitting on a swing set, and I saw this guy sitting on a swing set next to me, except I could see through him, and I knew he was old, but I couldn't tell that he was old. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't see his face. Right. It was all wispy and stuff like that, and he was wearing a job suit. Like, he wasn't like dressed like dapper, like fucking like going out on the town or anything like that, but he was
like
wearing,
a mechanic would wear or something.
No, like he worked in an office
kind of. Oh, I got you.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he had, my favorite part about this guy is that he had something stringy in his hands or lap. And the only thing that I can associate it with was either he had a bunch of yarn and he was knitting, or he had a bowl of noodles. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know what the hell it was. And he just, I just stared at him, and I got like in this like paralysis, like sleep paralysis, but I was wide awake outside on the swing set trying to just like enjoy my time, I guess. And he's like, he goes, "Be patient." I was like, "With what?" He's like, "You'll know." And then I looked at the ground and could not move. And I wanted with every fiber of my being just to get up from that swing set and run inside.
And run.
I wanted to get out of there as fast as possible. And just, I could not move. And what seemed like forever, which was probably like maybe 2 seconds or like a minute or two, I finally look over and he was gone. And I was just like, and I was able to move, and I got up. And I just like looked around, and then I went inside, and I was just forever. I was like, I don't know what be patient means. And it's been in my head ever since then. And what I think what he meant was, because I did try a second time and I contemplated a third. And I think he was just talking about like, look, there's always going to be a storm, and you have to wait it out.
Right.
You know, there's a brighter day after, like there's always sun after a storm. So I think he was just like, be patient and things are going to come together.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, about how old were you when you started experiencing these supernatural events?
The first one that I can vividly remember, it had to be 4 or 5, because we were living in Vermont at the time, and it was right before or right during, either I was in kindergarten or it was right before I started kindergarten. So 4 or 5-ish. And my sister seen it too, so she was about 3 or 4, because she's a year and a half younger than me.
So let's go back a little ways, and if you can, or if you're willing to share, what kind of childhood trauma did you go through? Because that's, and I know it may sound weird, but there is definitely a connection between childhood trauma and supernatural stuff.
Mostly. Was physical abuse from my mother. And there was, when I was older, when I would say about, it happened between 6 and 10 ish. I mean, I haven't really talked about it on my own podcast, but I guess the best way to say it was I was SA'd for a few years.
Okay. So what was there, like, did you have a father figure in the house?
Yeah, or... my dad My dad was around until I was about 7.
And do you?
And he was still around. To be clear, he was still around. He just wasn't there as much.
Right.
Because they got divorced.
Was that stuff coming from your mom or your dad or other people?
Other people.
Gotcha. So how did that shape your childhood and your life going forward? Like, did the incidents of supernatural stuff get more frequent?
Yes. Yeah. They got really, especially when I was living with my grandparents, when, you know, right around the time I first tried to take my life, we were living with my grandparents, and my brother had his bedroom down in the basement of their house. And the only place that we were allowed to play video games was his room. So my brother had the N64 in his room. And every time I went down to the basement, I saw these shadow figures either. And they were in different spots all the time and standing differently. It would look like they had their hands in their pockets, just kind of like leaned up onto their shoulder. Mm-hmm. Or they'd be crouching, or they'd be standing there with their arms crossed, or they'd just be standing there still or something like that. And they were either in the corner, the far back corner, next to a stand or beer, like a some kind of furniture, or the lolly column, or underneath the stairs. And almost every single time I went down to the basement, I saw these things. But I always went because I wanted to play video games. Now, once I got into my brother's room, I didn't see them.
It was just outside of there.
It was just outside, yeah. Because so my brother's room was finished, but the outside wasn't. The mm-hmm. outside of his room wasn't.
So were they always like the shadow people?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever have issues with sleep paralysis?
Oh, yeah.
Outside of that one incident?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I actually had one pretty recently, actually, in this very room that I'm sitting right now.
Ooh, that's not a good thing. So did you ever look into, the history of the houses that you grew up in to see if there were, you know, like, murders or untimely passings or anything like that?
No. No, because mainly because the only consistent place would be my grandparents, because that's where I saw them the most, but mm-hmm. I never looked. But we moved around, like we stayed essentially like in the same area, but we moved almost once a year.
Gotcha. So was the town that you grew up in known for any like paranormal, supernatural? You know,
funny story is I just saw an article a few months ago saying that my town is the most haunted town in the state.
Oh boy.
So I live in Sanford, Maine, and there was this radio station, a local radio station, put out an article saying that Sanford has the most reportings of paranormal activity in the state of Maine.
So do you have any idea like why that is? Was there like a natural disaster there or?
Not that I've anything? Ever noticed. No. And it's weird too, because there's a river that's a few miles north of here that intersects two cities, mm-hmm. Saco and Biddeford, and it's the Saco River. And that river actually has a curse on it from like the 1600s. And ever since the 1600s, like three people die every year in that river.
That's why I wondered if maybe like your area was like a witch, you know, type territory, or like home of like any kind of like cults back in the day.
There were cults. There were cults in the 70s and 80s.
Gotcha.
There was a few of them. There was actually, I remember when I was in high school, there were stories of, there's this park down the street. Yeah, that way. I don't know why it matters for you, for me to point which way, but.
Yeah, because we live pretty far apart.
Yeah. Supposedly a woman was attacked and murdered in this like park, but it was just woods at the time, but they turned it into like a walking path and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But supposedly that part of town, because it's weird, because it's like this section of woods right in the center of the town.
Mm-hmm.
And that's supposedly where I don't know the name, if the cult had a name, but supposedly in like the 80s, that's where they would find them and stuff was coming in and out of those woods. And there was actually, there was this gentleman, well, he wasn't a gentleman, he was a kid. And he had just bought a satanic ritual book or something like that. And he ended up in those same woods too. Actually, I'm not sure if it was the same woods, but he murdered a 12-year-old girl in 1984. And when they arrested him, he ended up like singing like a songbird. And he was just like, I wanted to kill my girlfriend, but I didn't do that. I killed this little girl instead, which he had like, I know he had no, he had like no motive to it. You know what I mean? Like he didn't do it ritualistically or anything like that. He just did it.
And I think that's the thing with a lot of, cause I love, like crime documentaries and stuff like that. I'm a huge like forensics nerd and stuff like that. And I think a lot of them do it just because of the simple fact that they want to know how it feels.
Yeah.
Take another life.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to know, I feel like there's more information to what happened. You know what I mean? That mm-hmm. They're just like, well, we got him, so fuck this guy.
And so what's it matter? Yeah.
Yeah, throw him away. They said that he was hyped up on marijuana and something else, LSD. He was on LSD and marijuana, and then he became a Satanist because of LSD and marijuana. And I was just like, okay.
I marijuana. Can kind of see like with the LSD, because yes. I feel with mushrooms, it's the same kind of thing, yeah. Where you're dabbling in a realm that you really should not be dabbling in.
Mm-hmm.
And things attach to you when you're having these experiences. And especially if you're not like believer in God, like God the Father in heaven, not a God, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But especially if you don't like pray and have protection and stuff, I think those things tend to attach themselves a lot more. And and that's why like even little kids have very, you know, especially if there's traumatic childhood events that go on, it leaves you vulnerable, which leaves a doorway open for attachments and all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I could see that, because what LSD is tied with MK Ultra and shit like that too, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, they were using MK Ultra for the Satanic Panic, and Satanic Panic was right around 1984. Mm-hmm. It was in the 80s.
Yep.
Anyways, and this guy is still alive too, in jail, in prison. up here, and I kind of want to talk to him, but I also kind of don't, because I don't want to give him a platform. But I'm curious, like, to know more of the story,
right?
And I don't, and also don't want to, like, bring up, like, emotions for surviving family members either. So I'm not sure.
No, that's understandable. I am. Like I said, I love crime documentaries. I love, you know, shows about that. My husband makes fun of me because he's always like, "Are you watching murder shows again last night?" And I'm like, "Yes," but it's not for anything other than I'm so curious on how the brain works and what physically inside of you, like, snaps where you either disassociate, you create your own reality, something happens to the chemistry of the brain and whatever. And I'm just fascinated by that. If that makes sense.
No, and it does, because I am too.
Disclaimer, I am not a serial killer. No, but
what she could be, because now she knows all the ins and outs.
And see, you, I know this about you. You like horror genre stuff. So do I. It is like one of my favorite things, I guess. I know that sounds like really messed up. And people who know my background, I have people make crazy comments all the time because I used to be an autopsy assistant. I loved it. I thought that was the coolest stuff, not because I want to chop someone up, but being able to, like, do that in a, you know, in an organized manner, and the morgue. And being able to, like, weigh organs and take sections of organs and look for, you know, blood clots or traumas or disease processes or whatever. It was always fascinating to me. And so I think that's where kind of like the like for the horror stuff is.
That makes
sense. But horror movies, a lot of people are like, "Oh, you should never watch that because, you know, you let in entities." Not if you ground yourself first, right?
Yep.
And some of them are so cheesy anyway.
They tend to become comedies, to be honest with you.
Like, which is one of the reasons, not predictable whatsoever.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I like them, because they're cheesy. A lot of them are cheesy. And you're just like, what the fuck?
Exactly.
Make you laugh. But like, I will be honest with you. I do like it when they can scare me. When they can give me, like, a good scare and actually make me, like, look around in my living room when I'm sitting there. And I'm just like, I like them even more.
I just heard a noise.
Yeah. And it's usually, like, the ghost or the demonic ones that, you know, do it.
Right.
But, like, the serial killers, like, slasher films and stuff like that, those never scare me.
Yeah, no, because they're most of the time they're silly. But I imagine with you, with all of your experiences that you had with the supernatural stuff, I would say that probably anything that is dealing with supernatural or possession or demons or whatever would probably be a wee tad traumatizing for you.
Yeah. 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 You're not wrong.
So you still have incidences of sleep paralysis even to this day.
Yes.
So do you still see, like, the shadow figures and stuff, or did that kind of stop?
I still do. Occasionally. Actually, so it kind of stopped for a little while. Like, so the second time that I tried, I was 13 and I used more of, like, I used, like, a bunch of pills that were in my aunt's medicine cabinet, not knowing what it was. Actually, one of them, I just like mixed a bunch of them and took a bunch of them. And I ended up just in the hospital for a day because of stomach pains and stuff like that. Because one of the pills was stool softener.
Oh, yeah.
I remember just knowing that if I took a bunch of crap that's not good for you, like I could, you know, expire when I was sleeping or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that kind of like chemically set my brain off in a like an imbalance, and right. like I just wasn't connected to myself mm-hmm. or the earth in any kind. So like I was just like, I guess in other words, like an NPC or something like that.
Mm-hmm. It's because you tend to, not just you, I'm saying in general, when people go through stuff like that, it's like they disassociate from their body.
Yeah.
And it's like almost like you're living as a spiritual being or whatever, but you're not actually present inside yourself, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it's just like Adam Sandler and Click when he's just fast forwarding through his life. You know, you're mm-hmm. just you're there, but you're just, you know, you're not there. You're going through the motions.
So would you say that with the suicide attempts, would you say that was your way of wanting to escape what was going on at home?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And my mother doesn't know either. The first time I told her I was bleeding because I fell out of a tree, and my doctor knew, just because I knew, like when he talked to me about it, like he's holding my hand and like he had, because it was wrapped and everything, like it already was cleaned out and everything. Mm-hmm. And he's holding my hand with my arm out towards him. And he's mm-hmm. like looking me right in the eyes. He's like, "This came from a tree?" And I go, "Yeah." And he's like, "How big was the tree?" And I was like, "It was a pine tree." And he's like, "Can you do me a really big favor?" Oh my God. I cry almost every time I talk about this part. He's just like, can you stay out of this tree? And like just the way like he was like talking, like it's almost like he like knew what happened, but he didn't want, like he knew that I was trying to hide it. So mm-hmm. like, I guess, I mean, if situation was reversed, and I was the parent and this was my kid, I would want the doctor to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, as the child, as I was, you know, I was pretty happy that he didn't, because I'm not sure. Like how my mom would have took it. You know
I was
mean?
Just going to say, a lot of times it's almost a relief that someone doesn't say anything, because the abuse can get way worse and escalate to just ungodly levels.
Yeah.
So was there something with your mom that made her abusive? Like, was she an alcoholic? Was there drugs involved? Or is it one of those cases where she just did not want to be a parent? And like a lot of people, what happens to them is like they don't know how to parent because they were not parented themselves, or they just have no desire to have children, like whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, I think it was like a mix of things, because my grandparents were great parents, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were parent figures to me. Like my grandfather is like my biggest male role model.
Mm-hmm.
He's like everything that I strive to be. Like mm-hmm. just his like he knows how to be calm, and he knows when he needs to be aggressive. Basically, like he knows, you know, but. You know, the one time my grandfather ever had disciplined me, he cried after.
Right.
And this was during the time that, you know, because we were living with my grandparents, and my mom she didn't give a fuck where we were. But she, what it really was, she had such a resentment towards my dad, and I looked like my dad.
Gotcha. So you were an easy target then.
Yeah. And she went after my sister too, a lot. And you know, it was me and my sister. My older brother couldn't do any wrong. He was the firstborn. My mom had him when she was 16.
Mm-hmm.
My grandparents practically raised him, so he was the favorite from my grandparents. Not saying that they like literally favored him, it just was easy to them because they looked at him like a son rather than a grandson.
Right.
And then my little brother was the baby, so he was protected at all costs. So it was me and my sister. I remember one night me and my sister tried to even run away, and we got down to the end of the street. It was like midnight and we were on our bicycles, and I don't even remember the plan, but we were going to go to school the next day anyway, for whatever reason. But we got down to the end of the street and my sister started crying and wanted to go home. So I didn't want to leave her there. So right. I went with her.
Did you feel like you were a lot of times like her protector?
A little bit, although her and I ended up turning on each other too. But I think that it was due to things that were happening to her once my stepdad came into the picture.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's because once he was there, that was when things for her and I became completely different.
Right.
So
I can understand that. And it's really hard as a child to go through those things and the emotional roller coaster that you're always on, because you always feel like you're walking on eggshells. You don't know what moment it is that's going to set somebody off, that's going to send somebody into a rage, or like step up the abuse, or, you know, whatever. There's always a trigger for somebody that is the abuser. There's always a trigger for them to do what they do, no right. matter what kind of abuse it is.
Right. Right. Yeah, my mom has always been quick to be in physical.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a hard time mainly because, you know, she was the main figure in my life. She was my guardian,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I experienced her emotions
right.
as much of a roller coaster as they were.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have like a good emotional role model, you know what
right.
I mean?
Absolutely.
So I didn't know how to handle my own emotions for a good portion of my life. And I'm still trying to figure that out even now.
Right. Because I'm sure, because it takes a very long time to heal from all of the traumas that you went through, and repeated traumas, to be able to learn like how to process all of that and how to find like what your true emotions are. Because one of the commonalities for people who have had childhood traumas like that is, especially from parental figures that like don't know how to express love, don't know how to express like their care and their protection and safety for you and stuff. And so when you grow up, you go through a series of crappy relationships, right?
Yep.
Because you didn't have a role model on how to love properly. And so it's like that baggage comes with you until you can pack that away, you know, and deal with the trauma and face the trauma to be able to like come out of that on the other side, to learn how to be loved properly and how what you deserve. Because yeah. A lot of people feel like they don't deserve better, because that's kind of the emotional crutch that people use, because it's a like a wall of protection, right? Nobody can get close to you or whatever. You're protecting yourself because you tell yourself that you're not worthy, that you don't deserve anything better, but you do. Does that make sense?
Yes. I definitely have, even now, walls. So it's really hard to allow anybody on the other side.
Well, I'm sure it is. Yeah.
And, you know, I've tried, not that I haven't tried, you know, I was in like madly in love with two different women in my life. And one of them was my first, you know, real relationship. And she ended up beating the shit out of me too. Randomly. And then the other one, which was the most recent, was emotionally, like mentally, like it was almost like it's hard. And I don't think that she did it on purpose, because she has her traumas too. And I don't think she was realizing what she was doing to me, and I didn't realize what I was doing to her.
Right.
So she just, she would say that I was a narcissist, to the point where I believed that I was a narcissist, to where I was going to my therapist. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I remember going to my therapist, and I was like, is there like a way to like test if you're a narcissist? And she's like, she stops and she looks at me and she just goes, do you think you're a narcissist? I was like, I mean,
you're definitely not.
Yeah, no, I know. But like, I was like, I mean, I was reading like the characteristics of a narcissist, and I have that and I have this. And she just like, she takes her glasses off and she's like, you are not a narcissist. The fact that you're even asking tells me that you're not a narcissist. Mm-hmm. And she goes, did so-and-so tell you that you are? And I was like, all the time. And she's like, that's the only reason why you think you are. And that's why you're drawing connections in between it.
Right.
Between yourself and that kind of person.
And that's the reason why I said gaslighting, is because I would almost guarantee you that she has narcissistic behavior. And it was like portraying it or mirroring it onto you, like, this is something that you are, even though it's her.
Yeah. And the more that, you know, I dissected our relationship, the more I realized it was, the whole time it was pretty
toxic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like she love bombed the shit out of me in the beginning, which is what a narcissist does.
Right. Because they have to manipulate to get their foot in the door.
Yeah. And I was head over heels. I would have done anything for her. And she knew that. Mm-hmm. And then that's when like this, like these little things would happen. I was playing PlayStation and I had replied to somebody who said hi, and like, it was like a bomb went off. And why are you talking to people online? I was like, I was just playing a game with them. What are you talking about? They said hi. So I said hi back. Mm-hmm. Like,
anybody that has narcissistic behavior also has to be a control freak. Yes. They have to tell you who you can and can't talk to, where you can go, what time you have to be home, who was there, a million questions. Let me see your phone. I know it's probably a girl that's under this number that says David, you know, and it's like, they have to control every aspect of everything, whether it's finances or emotional attachments or whatever, because that's their thing. That's what drives them. Their narcissistic behavior is control.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely felt like I was controlled.
Right.
Most of our relationship. So,
And then
I tried not to see it.
I'm going to guess and say, she made you feel, like she was better than you a lot.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
I used to be married to a narcissist, so I know these things.
she would tell me that I was a good father, and then basically tell me not in these words, but tell me that her parenting was better than mine.
Mm-hmm.
like in the same breath. You know what I mean?
They can't ever do anything wrong. It's always everyone else. Yeah. It's always everyone else's fault. Everyone else's behavior caused the problem. It's never theirs. Like ever.
Yeah.
So would you say that it's fair to say that because you are still working through like not just the childhood trauma, but even adulthood trauma, that's probably why you're still having incidences of figures and supernatural occurrences and sleep paralysis?
I think so. I do. There is another woman in my life, and sometimes I have a hard time calling her my girlfriend. Although that's pretty much what she is,
because you're guarded.
Yeah, and she's actually pregnant right now. Due in a couple weeks, and that was on accident. So when she told me, I was like, "Oh no!"
Again, yay.
Yeah, not that like obviously it's accepted. Like I full on take all responsibilities for my actions, and I love kids, so I would never do anything to cause, or on purpose anyway, to cause, you know, trauma to a child.
Right.
So there's that, and like. There was one point where she's like, "Do you ever think that you could, you know, love me?" And I was like, "I think, you know, cause she's a good person. She's done nothing wrong to me. She's been extremely positive." But like, before I found out she was pregnant, I had already started my detachment from her.
Right.
And I was like about to just like completely just be like, "Hey, look, you know, I really like you, but you know, I don't think this is for me," kind of speech. And then she was pregnant, and you know, I told her, I was honest, because I didn't want it on my chest. So I told her, I was like, you know, I was, before this, I was gonna like be done. And so now like she knows that, so like I think she tries to give me a little more space than she would have prior to knowing, you know what I mean? And it's been good. It's nice. It feels a little weird just because we're so close to having this baby, and she lives like an hour and a half away. She's going to have the baby down in her area. Where she's probably going to be moving in here after the baby's born, and we're going to give it a shot. But there's times where I'm just like, I don't know if this is the one.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Again, she's probably, out of every woman I've been with, my ex-wife was pretty good too, but she just lacked the,
empathy,
I guess. Yeah. She was great. And she's a good mother and everything. She's just, there was a lot of differences between her and I that I was just like, I don't think I like this lady anymore. You know what I mean? And I feel terrible for saying it, but like, that's just the way it happened. And with this one, you know, she's always positive. She's always like telling me she's proud of me, and it makes me feel good. First of all, compliments I have a hard time with, but I'm starting to get a little bit better with them, especially since my podcast. And I've made so many friends through the podcast and stuff, and they're always giving me compliments, and I'm like, fucking stop. But now, like, instead of saying stop, I'm like, oh, thank you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's because you weren't used to getting praise and accolades and, you know, have people say good words about you. And so it is really strange to have that happen when you didn't grow up that way.
Yeah.
And now you're like, "Ooh, that was weird." And it almost gives you this like, almost like little butterflies inside. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like little flutters in your chest when somebody says something nice.
And then like, I get this like big dumbass smile, and then I'm like, "Wait, fucking stop that. What is that on your face?"
Somebody made you feel good for a change. So, you know, you deserve that. But, you know, one of the things for relationships that's so, so critical is communication styles. And I know this sounds like super duper cheesy, but what your love language is, because, yes. Growing up the way that you did and going through what you did, you may not be like this super touchy feely, you know, highly affectionate, always having the public displays of affection and stuff like that, but your partner may be. And so it comes down to the, are you like, do you like her enough to like be vulnerable with her and tell her, like, if you don't like those things, why you don't like those things, or that you're uncomfortable with those things because of X, Y, and Z. Like my husband and I are very, like we knew right off the bat, like what each other's love language are. Ours are very similar, but I'm more of a like huggy, touchy, whatever person, and he's not. Uh-huh. So it's those things you have to like find common ground on.
Yeah. What's weird is for me is, so physical touch is my number one love language. That's how I express my love for somebody, is touching them. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I'm always, as bad as this sounds, I'm always touching my kids. Like I'm always just like grabbing them and or I'll walk by them and I'll touch it, like my son's head, or I'll run my fingers through my daughter's hair or something when I'm mm-hmm. walking by or something like that.
Right.
Or just like rub their back or their shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Or, and I try and cuddle them when we watch TV. Right. Actually, it broke my heart the other day. A couple weeks ago, we lost power and my daughter came down to my bedroom and telling me she was scared that she couldn't sleep without her light. And I was like, oh, just get in bed with me. And then she's like, okay. She goes to get her blankets. And then she comes down. She goes, I'm just going to sleep in the living room. And I was like, oh, what?
It's that age. But,
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But physical touch and words of affirmation, as weird as that sounds, because mm-hmm. I feel so weird getting complimented.
Right.
But at the same time, like, I love it. And I love when I'm especially... in a relationship, I enjoy giving words of affirmation. Like mm-hmm. I love telling like a partner, like I love you, or I'm proud of you, or, you know, you do such a good job, or you're so beautiful, and this and that, like things like right. that. And I will say that the most that I've ever used those love languages was with my high school girlfriend who beat the shit out of me, and the girl who, basically was the narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the ones that I, like my ex-wife, I didn't use them on. I mean, I did to an extent. We were together for 9 years. So,
right.
you know, there was times that I used it. And then with this girl that I'm with now, I don't think I've really used any of my love languages on her. And it kind of feels weird. And it's mm-hmm. almost like because of the last relationship, the last serious relationship anyway,
mm-hmm.
had broke me so bad to where like I don't want to put that time and energy into right. somebody else just to end up back at start again. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. No, that's understandable. And you know, I think sometimes like a lot of people get into like one relationship after the other because they don't allow themselves to be like, you know what? Like our personalities, like we don't mesh. That's not like my person, you know, whatever. And so a lot of people will go ahead and do it though and stay in just to be in a relationship, stay in a long-term thing just because they don't like to be alone.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think no shade to my ex-wife. again, she was a great person. She's a good person and she's a great mother. She gave me both of my kids. But I don't think I ever felt that kind of connection to where she was, you know, I was like, yes, this is the one, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
But the two abusive relationships that I was in, I was like, this is the one. Like immediately, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And especially if you guys like aren't on the same page, like you think you found your person and their opinion is like completely different. That's why I was like, communication is so important to.
Oh, yes. Comprehending communication too.
And listening skills. Listening to each other is super duper important all the time. So let me ask you this. I want to back up for just a minute. So you said like in 2020, that's when you really started to like open your eyeballs to stuff that was going on. Did you go through like a phase where a lot of people, when they become fully aware of stuff, it's almost like they go into like a depression because they're learning so much stuff that they didn't know before or things that were hidden from them that they have to like take breaks off of social media or like retreat and don't talk to friends or whatever for a while. Did you have anything like that happen to you?
Yes. Yeah, I did. I actually lost a lot of weight during this time. And I started doing mushrooms, oddly enough, for the first time. But my buddy Anthony, he actually like helped wake in the process of waking me up, and which actually him and I don't even talk anymore. And it was, you know, it was another relationship I felt like I had to get let go of. Although, you know, him and I have always been there for each other since the sixth grade. And I still call him a friend and everything like that. I just, you know, I made him mad for some reason. And the way he talked to me, I wasn't going to tolerate from nobody. So
that's good, though, because to me, that's a healthy step in the right direction. Because you know where your boundaries are now and what you will and won't accept from people, family included, because sometimes we have to cut off the toxic no matter where it comes from, whether it's a parent, a sibling, friends, you know, co-workers, whatever the case may be.
Yeah. So
it's not a bad thing.
No, I don't think so either. But yeah, like while he was helping me, cause he was telling me things that blew my mind. He's like, oh, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, no, you're silly. And then he'd show me like articles or something like that on it. And I'd be like, oh my God. And he actually got me my first thing of mushrooms and stuff like that. And I did that. And it was just, you know, interesting process. And then I would wake up in the morning. It was like, I want to say it was like almost 2 months straight. Every morning I'd wake up and I would look out the window. I would have my coffee. I'd be so excited about my coffee I'm so like, I don't want to get the fuck up, but oh man, I smell that coffee. so like coffee is like the main reason why I get up. But no, I'd be sipping my coffee and I'd look out my living room window and I'd just be like, this is pointless. You know, why are we here? You know? And I had lost an appetite, you know, coffee was the only thing that I was consuming for a while.
That's probably not real healthy on your body.
No, it wasn't, not at all. Yeah, I just, I'm glad. I mean, I broke through it and, you know, and then I gained all the weight back and then some. So, Yeah, it was interesting because at that time too, like I was still going to the gym and stuff, and I like don't know, like thinking about it, thinking back on that time, I'm like, where the fuck did I have the energy to still go to the gym back then and stuff like that? And the ex-girlfriend came up to me at the gym and goes, "Wow, you lost a lot of weight. You look really good now." Not that I was ever like fat, but I've always been stocky. Mm-hmm. But so like then I was
you're
just like.
Thanks for that backhanded compliment.
Yeah.
Now you look good.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So, yeah, it was just, and then, so basically it was like, I took a fucking black pill for a little while. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, all right, let's bring it back a little bit. And then like I started letting my, you know, positivity back in and stuff like that. And like, I love people as much as I hate them. Mm-hmm. You know, I still love them and I still care about other people. So, I mean, that's a main, like, and then the podcast kind of happened mainly because I wanted to talk to people about these like weird subjects mm-hmm. and conspiracies, because like people who experience this stuff tend to think that they're crazy. So I like to, you know, give people a safe space to talk, kind of like you are with me tonight.
And people are definitely not crazy that experience things. Because, and you will hear like the gamut of, you know, whether it's gray men, shadow figures, alien stories, you name it. I have a friend that, told me before when he has his sleep paralysis episodes, it's like the ring wraiths, you know, from Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, whatever it was. These are the kind of figures that are like sitting on top of him or holding him down during whatever. And so it's very interesting to me to hear like how different everybody's like paranormal stuff is, or sleep paralysis, things that they go through, because everybody has a lot of people in the podcast community have experienced something mm-hmm. at one time or another, and everybody's experiences are very vastly different.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. They some of them sound similar, but you know, I just, you know, I don't want people, you know, out there like holding it in, you know, mm-hmm. like just holding it and driving themselves crazy. So mm-hmm. that was another reason why I started the podcast. And I didn't do it to like a lot of people do, like they strive to like make money off of it.
Yeah, I don't,
and stuff like that. Like,
I don't make care. Any money.
Yeah. I mean, I have a Patreon and everything, but you know, it's there if people want to support it. But you know, at the same, like I even tell them every episode, I'm like, Patreon's there. You can become a member, get this, this and that. But if you don't, that's cool.
You know? Right. And I think it's almost therapeutic too, to like do your own show, do your own podcast, because
oh yeah, for sure.
You get to get out your thoughts and your feelings as well. Mm-hmm. As well as, you know, letting the guests do the same thing. So I've got to ask you this, because I ask everybody that has any kind of supernatural stuff. Would you say that you are an empath?
I think so. I just haven't, like, I've been told that I might be by a woman who's a medium. Her name's Chastity. She also has a podcast, and she was on my podcast as a guest. And I, all of a sudden, I became like wicked emotional while she was talking. Mm-hmm. And like my eyes got teary eyed, and like my hand was shaking a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I go, and I was like, I know this isn't my feelings.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, and like her voice was shaking as she was talking too. And I go, I was like, I'm really sorry to interrupt, because, but are you like, are okay. you about to cry? Are you okay? And she's like, I've never been on somebody else's podcast. I'm really nervous and this and that. And I was like, cause I'm like about to cry and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, I know like this, I don't understand why. And then, you know, and then I don't know, we just kind of continued talking. So I just let her, you know, continue with her story. And then at the end, she was like, you might be an empath. You might want to like look into like actually trying to like
harness that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You and know, then, the interesting thing about that, though, the reason why I ask you that is because every single person that I have talked to that has had some kind of experience like that mm-hmm. is an empath.
Okay.
Which leads me down this little rabbit hole. I wish somebody would study this because this is fascinating. But you know how some people see cryptids, yeah. other people don't, or two people could see the same thing, but they're visually seeing something different.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it could be right in front of both people, but they'll describe it like differently. And I wonder if like cryptids appear to people in the way that their brain is able to process what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. That just popped into my head, but I'm like, I wonder if that's not got something to do with it. Like whatever your emotions and feelings are, whatever is what you like mirror to see in whatever creature. Yeah. That may sound stupid, but I don't know.
No, that doesn't sound stupid at all. That mm-hmm. sounds, you know, like a coherent thought. Like, I mean, I think you're onto something. You know,
it would make sense because, like I said, even, you know, people who are in like standing in the same forest area or something, you mm-hmm. know, and they'll describe seeing something, but it's always two people's vision and is always a different thing. It may be somewhat similar, but they always describe it differently.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Like there's a story that I heard. It was a man and a woman, and they experienced first, they were a husband and wife. They experienced like some missing time or something like that, and they were driving. I think the general consensus is that they were abducted. But they were driving, they get the missing time, and then they're like almost like they came back or whatever, and they drive by like this bus stop, and the wife was like, did you see that? He's like, yeah, I did. And she's like, what are those kids doing over there? And he's like, kids? She's like, yeah, the kids at the bus stop. And he goes, I just saw owls. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. So, and that's why I'm wondering if it doesn't have something to do with like your brain's function and something with emotional attachment or something and being yeah. able to visualize in a way that we can understand visually to process stuff.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, yeah, there's something to that. I mean, I experienced, so I did like, I don't know if this like really qualifies, but I did a regression therapy and I was trying to heal from, you know, things. So mm-hmm. I went back into time in the regression. And there was this weird incident in the woods that I don't remember. I remember everything except for like seeing, so I saw like these weird beings in the woods and my sister was right there next to me and she never saw anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. So, well, I don't know if there's something to that because she just saw woods. I saw an entire village of mushroom people walking around and mm-hmm. I had glasses back then. They knocked my glasses off, told me I didn't need them anymore. And then I went back out. I couldn't see them anymore. And then I told my sister, and my sister's like, "What's wrong?" And I was like, "I lost my glasses." She actually ended up breaking my glasses. And I was going to tell her about it, but then I was too panicked about my glasses. So then I ran home to my mother, and she's like, "You're got an appointment. I'm not going to get you a new pair just in case your prescription changed." And then we go to my appointment to see if I stay with the prescription that I have, or if mm-hmm. I need a better one or a stronger one. And then my doctor's like, your eyes are fine. And he's like, I don't know how this happened, but you know, you don't need glasses. I was like, he goes, maybe just you wear them watching TV and reading. And then my mom just like, "Oh, I'm not buying glasses anymore." So I never wore glasses ever since. Weird thing though, too, at the same time that I bring this up, because I was going through old pictures of the albums right here. Can't find any childhood photos of me in glasses, but everybody remembers that I wore glasses when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that's like that whole story kind of goes off into left field or whatever.
Well, but not really, because I am a firm believer in spiritual healing and spiritual health. So that's what I'm like thinking the whole time while you're going through this, is that, you know, you were given the gift to have your vision restored during this regressive memory. Which is not a bad thing.
Oh, no. And a lot of people are associating it with like fae folk or whatever. And I've always heard stories of fae folk being like negative,
mm-hmm.
you know, negative entities. Like, so if these beings healed me for whatever reason that they wanted to do so, you know, because I've been back out in that part of the woods 100 thousands of times, and that has never happened again
mm-hmm.
that I can recall. And I almost wonder if like they, like it was blocked out on purpose,
right?
Like maybe by them or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I only remember, because I remember my sister, like I organically remember my sister stepping on my glasses. I organically remember going to the doctors and him being like, "You don't need glasses, just wear them for reading and writing and watching TV." And because I used to get really bad migraines, which actually they kind of started again recently.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, stress. No, it was really cool to not have to wear glasses, because I remember kind of being worried about wearing glasses in school and stuff like that. But you know, it's the weirdest part of this whole thing is that, because my sister remembers, my mom remembers, my brothers remember that I wore glasses, and there's no photo proof of it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's part of the Mandela effect too, right?
Maybe. There's so many of them now. And some of them that they've said that are Mandela effects, like they're, now I can't think of anything off the top of my head that they said that, oh, it was this way. People are remembering it this way, but it's actually Risky Business with Tom mm-hmm. Cruise. I was like, there's that he's not wearing glasses. I remember him wearing the sunglasses mm-hmm. and the white button up shirt. But then my sister showed me a video of him not wearing sunglasses, and his shirt was like a salmon fucking color or something. It had like the thin like zip lines in his shirt. And I was like, "What?" And then when I was talking, I did an episode on it, and I was like, "Yeah, watch, I'll show you." And I had it on screen record, and I brought the video up, and there he was in a white button up t-shirt with sunglasses. And I was like, "What the fuck?"
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I literally looked this up like months ago and it was different.
Right. And it's funny how those things like shift and change. And the gaslighting from that is just so crazy. Oh, it's God. Like, oh, you completely misremembered like this information. Like this was never like this. I'm old. And so when I was growing up, when I was a kid, like the Fruit of the Loom thing was a huge deal, right?
Yeah.
And all of the commercials were like the cornucopia on the table, the cornucopia fruit was on the waistband, the whole nine yards. And they're like, that never existed. And I'm like, bullshit, that didn't exist. I'm like, that was the thing, because back in those days, we literally had three TV channels, right? On a TV, you had to get up and dial change yourself. And I was like, I'm not crazy, because there wasn't the amount of commercials back then that there is now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's the funny thing is that they issued like this whole like list of their logo from the past, from when they started up until now, of how the changes they made, and none of them feature a cornucopia. And then this woman on TikTok was like, look at this shirt that I bought back
exactly
in this that I've been wearing off as like a fucking
1970
like shirt or something like that. She goes, there's a cornucopia on the fucking tag.
1970s people, it did exist. I swear to you, it did. Yeah. Because that's like what we had back then was for the loom t-shirts and stuff, because there wasn't like any other brands. So, you know,
I don't know. It's crazy. Hanes was back then either.
Do you know what's crazy? And I'm so interested in this, and I haven't had a chance to listen to the episode yet, but you did an episode with somebody that did the Indiana State Sanatorium.
Yeah.
I grew up in the town that was literally like 35, 40 minutes away from there. I had no idea that existed, but when I saw that you had done that episode, and I was like, immediately started looking, and I was like, oh, I bet that place is haunted as shit from like the what it was, you know, first started out to be used for, and then like turned from tuberculosis hospital into like mental health and nursing home. And I thought, oh, I can only imagine like how many deaths there were and stuff like that up there. And I'm like, the next time I go home to visit family, I'm going to have to go check that out.
You should. They do tours and everything in there.
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, ooh, that would be like exciting. I can't go to a haunted house because I will drop dead of like a heart attack, you know, at Halloween. I can't do those kind of things.
Yeah.
But this, I would be so super excited to do, because that would be fascinating.
Yeah. It from this, how he details what he experienced there, it sounds pretty interesting. I mean, he had like a full on like premonition of, or not a premonition. What's the past tense one? Because premonition is what you see before it happens. Like you see the future, right?
So are you talking about like afterwards?
Yeah, like he was peering into the past.
Interesting.
Or whatever. And he said he remembered. So what he saw was a nurse with the name tag Dolores. And he was talking to his paranormal friend. I think they just talked on the phone. And she was going there to investigate. Because he had already been there, but he couldn't go for whatever reason this time. And they were talking. He's like, you know, I had a dream, and blah 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 blah. Tells it was this a nurse named Dolores, and then because they in that building, they're still everything's still there from like when it was used,
right?
Like it's almost like they just up and left, you know, like a rapture happened or something like that. And she found paperwork in the office for a nurse named Dolores.
Interesting.
So
yeah, and I will tell you, I have had instances not with you know, like shadow figures or whatever. I do not claim to be a medium or anything like that, but I have had on more than one occasion other entities like talk to me. Like dead people stuff, whatever. I always tell this story, but I have a good friend that was doing a show, and she had somebody on that had one of the meters that they use when they're doing like investigations and stuff. And anyway, it kept coming up with words and stuff. And while I'm watching her video, there's like figures moving, like almost like smoke figures. And I'm watching this and I'm going, holy crap. And all of a sudden, like, it was like the floodgates of hell opened up and I could hear all these people like yelling and talking over each other and stuff. And there was this lady that was like wanted major attention. And it was like her parents were like her dad was a pastor and her mom worked at the church and she died in a horrific car accident and whatever. And I'm hearing all this stuff and I like paused the video and I'm like, had to walk away and go like ground myself and stuff because it was getting like so like loud and overwhelming. And I told my friend, I'm like, you know, it took me like 5 hours to get through your video because the whole time you're talking, like it was just incessant, like stuff.
Whoa.
And I was like, please don't do an episode like that again. Like I can only do like 20, 30 minutes at a time. And then I would have to walk away and be like, okay, breathe, like cleanse yourself of the crap. Yeah. So I don't like to let that stuff come in because I know that it's like people that like present themselves as loved ones or whatever. It's not always that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I'm like, like, I don't want to have anything to do with that stuff.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither. That's why I don't like purposely like try and conjure or
right, no.
or call on anyone. Specifically, mm-hmm. you right. know what I mean?
Yeah, I have no desire to do that. No desire to whip out a Ouija board or like none of that stuff. I don't want to. I like my sanity and my safety. Thank you very much.
Samesies.
Oh boy. So, my dear, thank you so much for being candid and open with me and for coming on and for sharing everything because you're amazing. Love you to pieces. Knew we were going to get along. Just
thank you.
Just super. So tell everybody where they can find you at.
So socials are Facebook, where the weird ones are, Instagram, where _ the weird ones are, TikTok. Now TikTok isn't just for my podcast. I do workout videos and stuff like that, and I try to be funny, so if you don't mind cringe comedy, you can follow my TikTok, as if it doesn't get banned, that is, because apparently, you know, the US government likes to put attention on things that don't fucking matter.
Exactly.
As such as TikTok. But Kevin This Is on TikTok. And I feel like there was something else that I'm on, but
YouTube
I'm on, the show's on YouTube, Where the Weird Ones Are. You can find the show on pretty much any podcatcher, but I think, specifically is Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. I'm not 100% sure if it goes anywhere else, but I think that there might be one or two. I just can't think of their names. But yeah, that's where the show is. That's where the socials are. I'm on Threads too, but I barely ever pay attention to that.
Same. Well, I don't pay attention to a lot because I don't spend much time on social media. So
that's a good way to be. Honestly, yes. That is a good way to be. Like my personal Facebook, I barely am ever on. I'm on everything that I'm on is for my podcast. Nothing like I'm not on any personal socials at, like ever.
Well, my Facebook is personal, but it's also like people that I know or podcasters or people I go to church with or, you know, whatever. Yeah. Like it's just mixed together. So, yeah, I don't care who knows like about my personal life. I'm very open about it.
Yeah.
But
me too.
And I don't, you know, the reason why I am that way is because I don't think that you can ever fully heal and recover and move forward if you're not willing to share your testimony and your journey of what you've been through.
I would agree with that 110%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what we covered today isn't really all of it, but you know, it's the gist.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you're always welcome to come back for another episode because I like nice people and I like people that I get along with. And we were vibing before the show with the whole making the hot sauce and whatever. And I told you my hot pepper story. So yeah, we're very similar. We have a lot of similarities.
Yes, we do. And then next week you're going to be on my show, right?
I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. So everybody go like, subscribe, comment, share, download, go to, we forgot one, go to his Patreon.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
If you so choose to do so, but make sure that you go show him some love, share his stuff, contact him. If you have stories, you want to go on his show. Or if you have questions, I'm sure he doesn't mind answering them. So go show him some love, people. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode, and we'll see you next time. Have a great one.